Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
You're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. If you want to call the show, 1-888-627-6008. You can ask us your dog question, because we're going to be going doggy today. We're not going to be talking too much about cats. Although, I did notice in the news that one of the guys who's in big trouble over the FIFA scandal, the world soccer scandal, he was, you know, accused of taking lots and lots of bribes. Apparently, he had an apartment in the Trump Towers in New York City for his cat. Yeah, that's right, his cat. How do you know when someone's really taking advantage when they have an apartment in Trump Towers for their cat? So we'll have to tune in more about that. I didn't expect the soccer scandal to reach into the pet world, but apparently it does. We also have some more news items to get to as we go through the show today. And I have a very interesting guest. He's just authored, or he's just helped with the editing of a new book called Decoding Your Dog. And it's given to us by the American College of Veterinary Behavioralists. Most veterinarians don't have much background in this. So if you've got a dog that people think is a bit of a difficult dog or a hard to train dog, or maybe even you've heard words like head case, then this is probably your book. So stay tuned on that one. Plus, there's some common problems that the vets can help us more than most trainers can. Things like separation anxiety. So we're going to talk all about that with our guest today, Steve Dale. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Oh, that's my honor to be here. You're barking up the right tree.
Oh, am I? Okay, well, please let us know. What's this book about, Decoding Your Dog? It sounds great and overdue, really overdue.
Well, thank you. I just contributed as an editor. And one could argue the ultimate experts in animal behavior are the veterinary behaviorists. When people who are wonderful people, myself included in that list, maybe, write books, as I do, we really take advantage of the research that veterinary behaviorists have done. We write about their research and popularize it, all of which is good. But the veterinary behaviorists have never done their own book. An individual or two who are members of the college, maybe, and certainly they write scientific papers all the time, but they've not done anything together ever. Until
yeah, you know
now.
What? I'm trying to think of an argument to that, but the ones I'm coming up with don't really fit. Like Dr. Ian Dunbar, he's a veterinarian and he's a really good trainer, but he's not a behavioralist in terms of his education. And then, well, I don't know, he'd probably argue that one. But then there's Dr. Stanley Coren, who's been a guest of this show, and he's also, Dr. Dunbar been a guest of this show. But Dr. Coren is a human psychology professor. And an editor and a author of dog books, but again, not a veterinarian specializing in behavior who's actually written a book. Maybe Dr. Dodds would count. I don't know. What do you think?
No, they wouldn't. So, gee whiz, I don't want to. Dr. Ian Dunbar is a genius, and so many of us are able to do what we do today solely because of him. And he was an early pioneer of what we now take for granted, and that is pretty much how to train dogs and how dogs learn, including positive reinforcement. So Dr. Dunbar is brilliant. In the UK, he is a behaviorist, actually, and certified as such, I believe. So he could fall in that category. Stan Coren is terrific. He writes wonderful books, but as you point out, he's a human psychologist. Dr. Dodds is not there. I'm sure she knows animal behavior, but that's not her specialty, as if it were. It's not about what the other people count for or don't count for. It's what this group is. And these are boarded behaviorist, which means that there are, in human medicine, boarded specialties, cardiologist, oncologist, neurologist. It's the same thing in veterinary medicine. It means you go to school for 4 years, and then you go to school some more for four more years to actually become boarded in a specific specialty. And there's only about 62, I think, veterinary behaviorists in the entire country. And these are I don't know how one could argue this, the ultimate experts in animal behavior. But another reason why I think it's so important that the behaviorist did this book is because, well, you know what, I will give myself some credit, and many, many of my colleagues have been saying for years, you know, it's fixable, it's solvable, it's a behavior problem. Pets do have behavior problems. In fact, it's the number one reason why our animals die. It's not cancer or kidney disease. It's behavior or perceived bad behavior. And I say it that way because the animal isn't acting bad on purpose. That never, ever, ever happens. They are just coping, dog or cat, bird, they are just coping the best they can. But in our world, to us, you know, you can't have a dog who wants to eat the neighbors. That's not good. So it's a behavior problem living in our world. And then ultimately, potentially, that bond can break. When the bond fractures, the animal is given up, oftentimes to an animal shelter. In the case of cats, sometimes they're just let outside to fend for themselves, and either they do or they don't. And more animals actually die of bad behavior, as I said, than any other reason. Now, here's what I was getting at. I mean, I'm thrilled that I've been a part of the explanation now for 20 years to say we have these behavior problems exist, but oftentimes, most often, they are solvable. We can fix them if, big if, you do it correctly and go about it the right way, get appropriate professional help to help you. It can all be fixed. But I think what I've not stressed enough, and this book stresses it, and I've been guilty right here of not stressing it enough, is that the first time the dog or cat or bird or ferret even, it doesn't matter, I just got a question about an iguana actually, does something different. The behavior is different than what it's been for that animal. See your veterinarian, because odds are it's actually a medical problem, perhaps a medical problem intertwined with what has now become a behavior problem. So a classic example that in real life I know of many times this exact thing has happened. Perfectly lovely dog, 8, 9, 7, 10 years old. The little boy or girl goes to pet the dog, and the dog turns around and snaps. Well, the dog could be arthritic. The dog could have an ear infection. The dog could have dental issues, on and on and on. And actually, that happens. And we've prevented dogs last moment from being euthanized just by getting a veterinary exam. So that is anytime. My message is anytime you see a change in your pet's behavior, contact first and foremost. Don't make assumptions. Don't go online and say, this is what I need to do. Contact your veterinarian.
Yeah, I had a mastiff come here for anti-aggression training, had been friendly its whole life, and all of a sudden it just had no patience for other dogs going anywhere near it. And from the moment I met it, it looked like it was in pain. And I said to the people, have you had it to the vet? Because it really, it's almost wincing. It's almost cowering when another dog approaches, sure. Like it's afraid to be jostled. And it turned out it had a disease that needed treatment, not a curable disease, and a really bad one that included pain throughout the whole skeleton. So every time this dog was bumped, it hurt. And that's why she changed her attitude. The dogs that she used to like that were jumping on her at the dog park, it just wasn't cool anymore. So I think sometimes we do put our pets in impossible training situations when, you know, they're trying to tell you something's wrong, you know, and they're trying to do the best they can to make their life comfortable in that moment. It looks like a training issue, but it's not always a training issue. On the other hand, what you just described, that example, if the dog is totally healthy, once you get that checked out, and he did just snap at somebody, don't ignore it, right? It's not going to be the last time, because usually they do it again. And actually, it's a bit of a test. It's going to get a little worse if you don't deal with it, right?
Totally correct. And in fact, we think that leaving behaviors alone, well, a couple things. We sometimes think that leaving behaviors alone, they will, as you allude to, just go away. It's just a one time. We make excuses, you know, oh, Fido's having a bad day, or, you know,
he was hot. Oh, he was tired. Oh, she went near the dish. Yeah. Oh, he didn't know her. Mm-hmm. Oh, they just moved in. Oh, they did it. And all that could be true, but you want to teach your dog, it's still not cool to growl at the grandbaby. It's still not cool to attack the new neighbor, right? I mean, and yeah, we're responsible for telling them first. You can't leave your dog to make these judgment calls about situations he has no experience with. You got to help them, right?
Right. But the thing is, how do you, I total agreement. But then the thing is, how do you help them? So we also write about how dogs learn and how we communicate with dogs. And, you know, there are so many misconceptions out there. One of the most common ones that's most often talked about is that you need to be dominant over your dog. You need to illustrate to your dog who's boss. Well, that's a bunch of nonsense. We do need to be good teachers, and we do need to be clear to the dog so the dog understands. And actually, those miscommunications are often part of the problem. But there's no reason to be dominant over a dog. I don't even know what that means. Dogs know we are not dogs.
I totally agree with you on this one because, you know, I sometimes I'm a really small person. I'm about 5'2", about 125 pounds. And sometimes I'm training dogs that are 200-pound Great Danes or just big Cane Corsos, Presto Canarios. They don't think I'm dominating them, right? They're choosing to listen. They don't think I'm the stronger person, in, you know, being in the room. No way. They're not stupid, you know?
I don't even know if they're thinking on those terms about strength. You know, dogs were all bred, each and every dog, as a species, they are, I don't know if they're born to please us. I think that statement's a bit overdone. But they are born to have a relationship with us. And they do look to us for direction. And if we don't offer that direction, sometimes dogs make their own decisions. It doesn't matter who you are if you're a person, right? Now, they know kids are kids somehow. And they often don't follow innately what kids will tell them to do. But they will if they understand. Generally follow our directions if we're clear, and if they're in a mode to follow those directions, which all in part depends on socialization, which is why it's so incredibly important to socialize our dogs, to take them to puppy classes, and then we write about all that, but we also write about, well, what puppy class is right for your dog? How do you choose the right class? What should you look for? What should you, in fact, in my personal opinion, just walk away from, walk out the door if you see certain stuff happening?
Oh, well, we'll definitely get to that in the next segment. We're coming up to a break, so we're going to have to wrap this up a little bit. And I do want to talk about some of your efforts to deal with pet stores and selling puppies. So we'll talk about that when we come back. But I want to just question you a little bit on the idea that that dogs don't need to be dominated. I agree with that mostly. And Ian Dunbar was really, you know, exceptionally responsible for changing that attitude years and years ago. And, you know, using treats and cuddles and praise to motivate dogs rather than fear. But I'm wondering, you know, when I train a Doberman, there is a little bit of an issue. Somebody has to be the leader. When I train a Golden Retriever, no, it's not the same. It's just not the same. Don't you find there's a difference in breeds?
Maybe we're talking semantics here. You can be as forceful as you point out yourself. If you could be as forceful as you want to be with a mastiff, and if that big dog ain't doing it, that dog's just not doing it. How do you motivate? You know, and you can force, and in fact, very often we can force dogs to do things. That's not a problem. Usually, I mean, sometimes they won't do it. That's first. But oftentimes they will. We'll force them to do it.
Okay, well, you know what, Steve?
Then what kind of relationship do you have with your dog?
Well, exactly. And this is a great place to break. If you're having a dog problem and your dog isn't listening to you and you want to know, how do I get him to do what I want to do without forcing him? Stay tuned. We'll be back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Hey, pet lovers, listen up. No more fleas and no more ticks with the No More Tick Spray. All natural, non-toxic, and even safe enough for you to use on yourself. It smells great. You have to try it. It really works. This is what I want you to do. Go to www.nomoreticks.com. Once again, nomoreticks.com. Your pet will love you for it. Go to nomoreticks.com.
Scratch it.
Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo lick it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Hello.
I can hear you.
All right, listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We are having some technical difficulties. I'm not sure why. Maybe a bear tore down the wires. Maybe there's some bear interference. Bears have been in the news a lot, so I wanted to mention it. First of all, there was a bear that was stirred up by the fire in California, and they had to release the bear, and they were showing some footage this morning of some Karelian bear dogs chasing the bear off so it wouldn't become too tame with people. And that caused a lot of worry among some activists who believe the bear was being mistreated. I think it's best the bear not like the people, so I'm glad they did that. Then there was also a bear in Toronto that was shot. The bear was climbing up a tree in a suburb, and they tried to tree it with gunshots, but instead it came down, and then it went up again, and there was all this kerfuffle. School kids were going to be on their way to school. The police shot the bear, and people are outraged because the proper authorities didn't come with a tranquilizer gun and deal with it properly. And it's just so interesting for me to think about this, how there's some people who shoot bears and some people who want them protected, and how the difference in attitude toward different animals. I've got Steve Dale talking with us today, and he's got a new book out called Decoding Your Dog. And it's written by the veterinary behavioralist from the American College of Veterinary Behavioralists, and he's edited it. And it will help you get your dog to do what you want it to do. So that's where we left off before the break. I'm Deb Wolf, and I'm talking to Steve Dale. So, Steve, what besides scaring your dog into listening to you, which, you know what, it's just not going to work over the long haul. You're not going to have the same response that a seeing-eye dog gives, because you don't scare a seeing-eye dog. There's nothing more precision than that. How do they train those dogs? How do you use this praise-reward thing?
Well, it's pretty easy to do. I mean, if you think about it, think about some bosses that any of us have had over the years, right? You may do things because you want that paycheck. For the boss who, you come in and the boss, no matter what you do, you can't please that boss. They yell at you. They almost literally push you into doing things that you really don't want to do, but you might do it anyway. But then there's the boss that's really motivating, that you personally like, and then who motivates you more and praises you more. So you like that boss even more and more. So which one would you rather work for? Which one would you rather be with? And really, it's no different with our dogs. So our dogs are forced to live with us no matter who we are, and they do tend to like us no matter who we are. That's the thing about dogs. They keep coming back for more and more, even if we're not as kind to them as we could or should be. But it doesn't match the relationship of someone who is kind and just appropriate and fair with their dog, and as clear and as consistent as possible in communicating with that dog as well. How do you train them? You use praise. And in fact, this isn't my opinion. So for the old timers out there who might disagree and say, no, you have to push the dog to do what you want the dog to do, and you have to use a choke collar, and they call them that for good reason, the chain link collars, or a prong collar.
Oh, there are the prong, like some medieval torture device put on a woman who talks too much.
And,
terrible.
I wouldn't call it a torture device. It's just not... We can do better today. I mean, used appropriately, it's not a torture device.
But it looks like that, doesn't it?
Doesn't it look
like something from medieval set? Like the woman had to wear it on her neck if her husband didn't like her enough? You know, it just looks like that to me. It looks barbaric.
Or either that or for some kinky you-know-what going on. But
well, that's a whole other thing. Yeah,
no.
We're not going to hit shades of gray here. Let's talk black and tan, Dobie colors. Gray and white, black and white. Let's stick with the dog colors for now.
Okay, so sticking with that, we know that we can do better than using tools and equipment like that. We don't need to. You know, I'm guilty of it. I mean, X number of years ago, we didn't know any better. Today, we know better. And it's not only my opinion or my judgment and that of many, many, many others. Really, now we have science to demonstrate that, listen, if we want our dogs to live with us, to behave appropriately, it doesn't mean that dogs, even if we follow the book, follow the recipe, won't have a particular issue or issues, but certainly you're going to be far better off and have a better relationship with your dog.
The problem here. I see that there's lots of people out there, the school you talked about, the people who think that harsh works better. They get more immediate results from harsh because they don't. It's not natural for them or familiar to them to use the other methods. So harsh works for them, you know, and quickly. But I bring to the what I do when I'm arguing with them, and there was this guy I had to have on my show a whole bunch of times, this dog wizard guy who was an advocate and a follower of Cesar Millan, and he would always argue with me about this. And I would just say to him, look, you know what? You keep saying that your style of training with shock, electric collars, and all these type of devices and pain as a deterrent, that all these things work better. But because you can get a faster result, immediate result, the dog just doesn't act up anymore while wearing this device. But I said, you know, the dogs that need to learn the most, that need to be most precision trained, the dogs who are seeing for the blind, the dogs who are helping people who can't move their legs, the PTSD dogs working for ex-military soldiers, you know, the dogs who are keeping us safe in the police, all these dogs, that's precision training. That's where you're investing $10,000 to $30,000 on an animal and its training. They don't use harsh methods because harsh methods don't work as well. And that's it. That's a fact. So I don't want anyone thinking they have to be cruel or dominant or scary or physical with a dog, because you really don't, right, Steve?
Well, you're totally correct, of course. And it's not only, punishment, first of all, punishment in the right context makes sense to me. Punishment can work if it's strong enough. It'll, as you point out, stop the dog from doing whatever it's been doing. But I don't understand if there is a possible way in which punishment alone can at all illustrate or communicate to a dog what you want the dog to do. So at its best, maybe it will deter the dog from doing what you don't want it to do. It never communicates to a dog what you do want it to do. And without that information, the dog just doesn't know.
Yeah, so you're teaching the dog something like barking equals shock, or chasing people or growling at people equals shock. But you're not teaching him that being quiet equals love, or greeting people equals cuddles, or any of these things that you actually want. You know, you're teaching him what not to do, but you're not teaching him what you want him to do, right?
It's bigger than that. It doesn't change emotion. By your examples, it doesn't change emotion. So dogs generally growl or lunge at people or whatever you said because of fear, really, right? So by doing this, what we are doing is we're increasing the fear, we're at the very best, we're not changing it.
That's more dangerous, because you get the dog to stop growling, but he's still not comfortable. He's still not cool with the situation.
Exactly.
So at some point, the collar isn't working, the collar isn't on, or maybe he just decides his fear's overriding the pain. You have a ticking time bomb instead of a dog who likes people because you socialized him properly. You know, it's really...
Yeah.
So this book, who should read the book? Like, what kind of problems does it address? If someone's got a dog that's just been really, maybe they don't even take it out anymore because it has so many problems, or they don't have people over anymore. Is that the kind of person that would benefit?
Well, yes, I think so. But if it's that bad, yesterday, call your veterinarian and get professional help, because a book in of itself, while it can be instructive, is not going to solve your problem. This is for anyone with a dog, whether you're an experienced dog owner or not. Whether you want to learn more, hopefully you want to learn more and understand how dogs learn, how dogs think. This book will help you do that. We cover everything from the very, very beginning, where to get a dog from, puppy socialization. We outline a long list, a laundry list of behavior issues, separation anxiety, aggression, inappropriate elimination, house training issues. I mean, everything. And we go right through senior dogs, where we talk about, or write about, really, it's not a radio show, it's a book, we don't talk much, but we write about canine cognitive dysfunction syndrome, which is kind of like Alzheimer's in dogs, and how to deal with that, some things that people can do to maybe prevent it, or maybe delay it, or deal with it if it's happening.
Well, the first two examples were fear-based. The Alzheimer's has to do with aging. So even if you're listening now and your dog's one or two or three or four, it's coming soon. They all get there pretty quick. You're only got about a decade before, at the best, before they start to age. So a lot of times I think people are really interested in puppy care, but they stop paying attention to the years that really matter. If you've got a Great Dane, he's going to start aging around six. If you've got a little dog, you might have till 10. Most dogs, 7 or 8, is when they start to take that turn. So you got to start thinking about these things. I have a 13-year-old standard poodle, and sometimes we'll be out for a walk, and he's having a great old time, and he's been with me the whole walk, and then he'll just greet me like he just saw me. Oh, so excited to see me, you know? I know he didn't remember. Like that, and that's a sweet, you know. Or sometimes he'll be barking in the backyard because he thinks something's in his way, but nothing's in his way. You know, and I have to just go out and say, hey, you're okay, come on in. And then he comes in, you know, but it can show in funny little ways like that, but it can also show in ways that are troubling, right?
Right. But right now is the time you should start to address it, really. So there are some products that may be able to help your dog out. But there are also some things that you, of all people, are perfectly suited to do, and that is continue learning through life. It's just like when we go to one of those retirement places. Well, not you and me. I mean, Deb, we're too young.
Where they do these arts and crafts activities like what kids used to do in preschool. Oh, God, help me. Oh, no.
But the idea, though, is to keep the brain cells working. You know, the brain is a muscle. Keep it exercised. And we know, in fact, dogs have been used to help us better understand human Alzheimer's as to what to do about it. And in fact, people have been used for veterinarians to better understand canine cognitive dysfunction syndrome, because dogs are in so many ways very similar to us. And it turns out that some of these prevention methods that seem to help for people also help for dogs too. So for example, it turns out exercise is a really good thing to potentially delay the onset of canine cognitive dysfunction syndrome in people. Well, it turns out that studies have showed the same is true for dogs, too, as just one example. And there
that
are many,
sense.
Many other examples.
Keeping their
really
brain active, keeping them thinking and learning and socializing.
Yep.
And, you know, some of that's hard to do when your dog has, mine doesn't, but some people, when they get a dog that's 12 or 13, there's other things going on, like arthritis, you know, issues where you kind of stop taking the dog out. And a lot of times, then the dog just lives for food. Then sometimes the dog gets overweight. Now it's harder on those joints, you know, and the whole thing kind of spirals. So I think we have to remind people, take them out. Not in the heat of the day, not for a marathon run, but, you know, take them out. Take them for a visit. Even if you're just going to a friend's, take them for a visit or have someone visit. Like a dog who's friendly, like my old poodle, oh my, he's such a schmoozer. He loves a good visit.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Those are the kinds of things that we should do. And as I say, there are some products that may help. There's some changes, sometimes not a dramatic change, just adjustments in diet that can help. Some of these things we don't know that they'll help for sure, but we know they won't hurt. So we mention these things too. And being overweight and obese, which half our dogs are, is linked to an increase of cognitive problems.
So we talked a little bit. You said the book talks about how to get a dog. Since we teased everybody with that one, what have you been doing about pet stores and dog sales? Because I know
well,
it's important.
Yeah. So where not to get a dog is through pet stores, because we know where those dogs, and in some cases cats too, are coming from. We know their supply chain. No responsible breeder will ever sell to a pet store. And I know that because the definition of a responsible breeder is someone who wants to meet the people and vet the people, if you will, that are going to buy that kitten or that puppy or even adult dog as far as rescue groups go. They want to meet you in person. And if not in person, at least they want to have a phone conversation with you. There's usually an application to fill out. They don't want someone else or would ever trust anyone else to do that job. They want to be in the picture. They want to be a part, if not the sole part, of that decision. And that never, ever can happen if you go to a pet store. It's the pet store's decision as to whether you get the dog. And really, there is no decision. The question, the only question they ask is, will that be cash or charge? And that's really it. I mean, they don't discern. So it's
yeah,
not
there's that.
Right.
When I breed dogs, and I don't breed often, this is my last litter right now that I have. Just since we're talking about it, I'll let you know they were born May 22nd. If people want to see their cute little standard poodle faces, they can see them on my Facebook site on Camp Good Dog. Oh, yeah. They just opened their eyes last night, some of them. So today is the big day for the others. My kids were out there. My kids are having other kids over to celebrate. It's just great. But I would never, ever, ever give a dog to someone I didn't meet. I like to meet the family. I like to meet them more than once. If they've had a dog before, I like to call their vet and find out how their care was. I like to hear stories and see pictures. When they show me pictures of the dog that they had before, that helps, right? Like if they're so attached that it's still on their cell phone or in their wallet or on their necklace and it got to be a ripe old age, that's a good one. You know, I like to see that they have a fenced yard because I have big dogs. They're standard poodles. They need some room, and the fence can't be 3 feet high, which is shorter than the dog's eye level, you know. So we need on, especially on two legs. So I like to see all that. And it would be terrible for me to put them in a pet store for that reason. But the other reason is the risk to the puppy's health. They can't possibly be fully vaccinated at that stage. So to put them in a pen with a bunch of other puppies from who knows where, or even just a store with a bunch of other puppies from wherever, and the public not washing properly between pups and between litters and between stores and their own dogs, and you'd get a lot of death. And I'm not kidding. Like, really, you would. You would get a lot of sick puppies.
Yes, you're totally correct. And at the heart of the matter is where these dogs are from. So they're from puppy mills. I mean, so if they're not from responsible breeders and they're not from legitimate rescue organizations, where else could they be from? I mean, they are not from little old ladies down the street. They don't just randomly appear either. They are from factories. They're from puppy mills. And you are supporting a puppy mill every time you get one of these dogs. And what I've wondered for years is how these can even exist in a country that is so in love with their companion animals. I mean, we love our dogs and we treat them as members of the family. Every poll out there indicates even people who don't have dogs think positively of them. So what's wrong? There's a huge disconnect, and people have taken this matter into their own hands. So a movement was created just organically several years ago online, mostly, of people that's now a not-for-profit called the Puppy Mill Project, but they are working diligently and effectively, by the way. This is a running rampant across America, where communities are saying, and I was part of this here in Chicago, and a little bit nationally, I suppose, but very much involved in Chicago, where I live, to say no dogs or cats can be sold at pet stores. We made that an ordinance in the city of Chicago, and then Cook County, which Chicago is in, but all these suburbs around as well, did the same thing.
Steve, I think it's so great what you're doing. I just have a question for you, because in where I live, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, the same is true. You cannot buy a pet in a pet store inside Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Great.
But you can drive, but you can drive 10 minutes to one of the many suburbs and do that.
Well, that's why we did it. Yeah, that's exactly
so
why
frustrating.
We did it. Yeah, I understand. That's why one of the Cook County commissioners, when some of the pet stores said, well, we'll just go to the suburbs. And of course, we know people could just drive to the suburbs. So The county commissioner said the same thing. Now we have, what I was saying is we have entire states that are looking at this. And I suppose you could say, well, they could drive from state A to state B at some point. Yeah. But the more states that do this and the more communities that do this, then it'll be more difficult to find a pet store that sells these animals. And we're a ways away from that happening. However, the good news is there's huge momentum out there to make it happen. I mean, you know, listen, the industry, and it is an industry, the puppy mill industry and those pet stores that sell those dogs, they are not going down without a fight. In Cook County, they sued, or at least it didn't even get to court. They tried, they did sue, but it didn't even get to court. The judge said, you have nothing here to base this on. And that's good news, you know, and other judges look at rulings that other judges make, and the hope is that there is no leg for them to stand on, but probably they will continue to try to fight this, and it's not going to happen tomorrow. But as you close down these potential, the potential ability to buy these animals, and you shut down the supply, then hopefully the source begins to diminish as well. And the only goal here is to shut down puppy mills. And by the way, I just want to make a strong point of saying that I love you. I love responsible breeders who really care. There's nothing wrong with purebred dogs. So what some have said is this is all about animal rights organizations, none of which I belong to, but animal rights organizations. No, it's about animal welfare. It's about doing the right thing, and it is about closing down puppy mills. I can't imagine anyone would say they're a good thing, but they're there. They are still here, and it's not only the dogs and cats sold at puppy mills that upset me, it's, or kitten millers, if you will, but it's the parents of these animals, particularly the mothers. These dogs are just bred to death, quite literally, and that's shockingly
sad. It's so sad. It's so sad. I've been part of where they have a hoarding situation, and they try and get all the dogs and cats out of there and rescue them, and, you know, the authorities are involved, usually police, SPCA, or animal welfare, depending on where you are, and they'll call in people like me to help catch some of the dogs or catch some of the cats, because these animals aren't friendly. You know, they're not tame. It's a huge job. There was one case where there were 100 cats in one house. And, you know, it was just horrible. But sometimes it's a breeder as well. And they will have animals in teeny tiny cages. And sometimes they're so ill. They're so sick. I wouldn't call these people breeders
because it insults people who do what you do.
But it's just, you know, it just breaks your heart to see a three-legged pregnant chihuahua with a bulging eye that's deaf. You know, and she's four, and you know she's had eight litters. Like, it just breaks your heart. And there's lots of these dogs. There's, like, little tiny bees. And they're the cutest little faces and the cutest little dogs and all these little cages. And each one, it's, like, it's horrific. You know, it looks like, I don't know. It's just terrible, terrible thing to see. And they're in their own feces and things like this. I mean, it's just, they're matted and their health care is terrible. Their teeth, when these dogs get rescued, oh my goodness, they have to have all their teeth pulled usually. Like, these people are parasites. They abuse these dogs. It's so not right. Oh, we only have 60 seconds. Okay, so we're going to come back and talk about how you can do the right thing and how you can get your dog trained. We don't want to end on a note like that. And I might. Well, you know what, though? What's a positive thing is some of the veterinarians have stopped declawing cats because it's not necessary and it never helps a training situation. And it does cause the cat pain for its whole life. So some countries, places like
the
UK.
No. I'm opposed to declaw, but let's not misinform. It doesn't cause cats pain their whole life. I don't know that that's true, but
does.
I'm not for declaw.
Okay,
I agree with
we'll
you. Declaw.
We'll come back and argue about that.
Okay.
Because what I was about to say is sometimes when a whole area goes against something, we got to go to break. Stay tuned. Be back. We'll be arguing on Smart Animal Talk at Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
Your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But doggy goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try doggy goo. Your dog will doggy goo. Look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com, order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Talking on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And I was just saying how sometimes when an area outlaws something, if you're a veterinarian in the UK, you cannot maintain your insurance and practice if you want to do declawing of cats or cosmetic surgeries, such as certain ear croppings and tail dockings. And the same is true in the province of New Brunswick and Vancouver Island. So bit by bit by bit, places in the world are making it so that these things are changing. And as a result, the rules started to relax in the dog show ring, and there was less cropping and docking mandatory, and things started to ease up. So my red poodle, who's just had a litter, has a beautiful, long, curly, cute tail. Now the males, because I don't inbreed, my males were bought and, separately, they came with their dock tails. But all my puppies have a beautiful little curly tail, and I don't see any reason why I would change that. So we were talking about that, and Steve disagrees with me about the idea that a cat, when it has its joint amputated on each and every claw, so like a bit of your finger taken off, not just the nail, that it causes pain its whole life. I've had vets tell me that. I've had trainers tell me that, cat specialists. But I'm just going with what I see and how these cats are miserable, and that it doesn't tend to remedy the cat problem the people had. So what are your thoughts on it, Steve?
Well, I go with facts when I talk about things. You're talking to someone who's fought, I'm opposed to declaw. I've written extensively about my opposition to declaw, and hopefully I've made a difference even before it was trendy to do so, and continue to, but I like to stick to what we know. So there's no question that, and I want to make it clear, that declaw is an amputation. That cannot be a good thing. I mean, you're not cutting the cat's nails, and I think most people are beginning to understand this. You're cutting at the joint. So if you bend your finger at the last joint, not that finger, don't give me that finger, Deborah, but if another finger, and you bend it at the joint, that is what you're cutting off the tip of that finger. And that's what we're doing to our cats if we declaw. Declaw is, I agree, it's absolutely not necessary. There are all
sorts
of
things that we can
do.
Well, the thing is, if it worked, you wouldn't see declawed cats in shelters and homeless. They're so overrepresented, it's not even funny. Because usually if they were scratching, they turn to biting. There's something underlying.
No, we don't know that. So there have been studies that have indicated that that's actually not the case. We don't know that there's more behavior problems in declawed cats. We don't know that they continue to suffer pain. Now, what I said years ago that I'd like to see someone study, when you talk to people who have amputees, they say they have phantom pain their whole life. So we know that we are addressing the pain the best we can with cats. following the declaw. We don't know if they're suffering pain, and maybe this is your point, which I would agree with.
Yeah, that is my point. It's exactly the phantom pain. That's it. You got it. I agree.
We don't know.
When someone chops off their fingers and the rest of their life, they feel them, and they feel them hurting or tingling or weird sensations, or, you know, now a cat has to walk on those fingers, and it has to walk into a litter box and use it. And, you know, I mean, most of my cat training calls have to do with litter box issues or cat scratching. Almost, I'd say 80%. You know, when I've got a naughty cat.
Well,
it's all in that claw area. Okay, well, we only have 5 minutes. We'll have to disagree on this, but we both agree
that you really shouldn't
declaw your cat, right? There's no reason.
And I'm not, if you're talking about the possibility of phantom pain, I don't know that we disagree at all. I would agree.
Yeah, I think if humans suffer that when they lose digits, then it must be so. It just must be, because there's so much else similar.
I don't disagree. What I do not like are people who make, because they don't want to see cats declawed, and I don't either, but they make all these other assertions that we know through research we've done that aren't true. But certainly, I'm no fan of declaw by any means, and I've been on the record for now decades. It makes me feel old of saying that, even as I said before, it was trendy to do so. I hate that. It's ridiculous. Barbaric, really, that we do this to our cats.
Yes, especially since if you're listening and your cat is not using the litter box or is clawing the furniture, you should call me next week, because we can fix this live on air. There's no problem. You know, really, there's no problem we can't fix with a bad cat. They're really, really, really easy to train, and they're really willing to scratch the thing you provide for them if you do it right. So they just need to...
Well, that's assuming the cat that's thinking outside the box doesn't have a medical issue that's also exasperating or causing the problem.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes, you know, when I take a call like that, that's where we start. So we make sure that that's not the case first, or at least I try to as best I can on the radio. But we had a history-making dog in the news here. The first ever in a BC courtroom, a dog was brought in when a very young girl had to testify and go through about 18 minutes of description of a sexual assault made on her. And this lab sat at her feet and comforted her. She petted it a few times. It was, you know, nuzzling her the whole time. She held its leash, and it helped her give her testimony. So I really, really hope this will become a trend all over the world, because it makes such a difference for kids.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. There's this magic in all of us, but particularly kids, and it with the dog there, they feel more confident to say things that they otherwise wouldn't. It's amazing.
And I think they feel safe. You know, as a person who's always had dogs, when I sleep somewhere where I don't have a dog, every sound wakes me. But when I sleep here, if the dogs aren't barking, I'll sleep through anything, because there's nothing there if the dogs aren't barking. I think on a very primitive level, we all know if the dog is lying there calmly, like the PTSD soldier who thinks he's under attack, he looks down, the dog is calm. I must be mistaken, right? Like it gets right in there and tells you, be calm. You're okay. You're all right. The dog will keep you safe. I really think so. So I'm hoping this will extend all over the world. And it's not just dogs. There are some cats brought in as well, sometimes usually with an adult, when the person just needs comfort. So Alzheimer's and dogs. Yeah, my dog is a little bit dotty, but he is really old, Steve. Do you think I should worry about it? I mean, he is 13, and every time I take him for his semi-annual, you know, elderly checkup, the vet is like, he's still here, you know, because standard poodles normally live till 11, right? And this guy's 13 without an issue. It's very slim.
Well,
depending
on the cognitive decline that's begun and the extent of it, a product called Anapril, which is selegiline hydrochloride, might help. There are other products that seem to help some dogs and do no harm. There are a variety of those, which we outline in the book, Decoding Your Dog. You could try, based on what your veterinarian recommends, a variety or any of those products. And one of the pet food companies has a diet that's a prescription diet that the upside is it can help, The downside is it doesn't help it if it upsets their stomach, right? And if the dog is used to being on a certain food, so some dogs transition well, a few do not. But it's all a conversation to have with your veterinarian. At the end of the day, there is an end of the line, as you point out, for all our dogs. But can we help them reach that? Can we help them reach that a bit more comfortably? And
well,
I think
okay.
in many ways,
you know
in
what?
Many cases, we can.
I think as long as he's happy, we'll stick with what we're doing. But if he starts to get confused, I might consider it. So we have to go, Steve. Steve Dale,
oh, no.
everybody. Yeah. Thank you for joining me. If you want more of me, you can find me at DeborahWolfOnline.com. And Steve, where can they find you?
Well, how about my blog? That's ChicagoNow.com, ChicagoNow.com/Steve Dale. Or on Facebook, as everybody can be found.
All right. Well, thank you. Okay. So that was the wonderful Steve Dale. And we had a little argument, but then we resolved it. Isn't that lovely? All right, everybody. Until next week, be good to your animals.
Anytime you're